The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
We have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston, broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to our Friday morning Space Show program. Great to be here. Thank you all for tuning in. And I am your host, David Livingston. So today we're going to do the one-hour format show. So again, if you have comments or questions for our guest, either get them in by email or by our toll-free line well before the end of the hour. The toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. Remember, no call screeners. Let the phone ring and we'll bring you up on air as quickly as possible. Email, of course, drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And then again, for those of you that can use the phone this morning, it is 1-866-687-7223. Do go to our website, and there you will find quite a bit of interesting things. So first of all, our detailed newsletter is there, and that's uploaded Sunday evening after our Sunday show. But it has all the details of our programs for the week, our guest bios, and it also is the only place we have a future events section to tell you what's on board for the Space Show in the coming weeks. Everything we do is archived. It's on our website. You can easily listen off of our website or easily download the program. There's a store up near the top of the website. It's called Space Show Gear. Please check it out. There is a guest search tool next to the social media button, and here you can do global searches like you could in Word or Excel or a PDF file for your favorite guest, your favorite keyword, like space tourism, for example. You'll find all of the programs that have aired on the Space Show that address your favorite keywords or topics or have your favorite guest on the show. Jot down those dates, and then you can pull up all of those programs with the Space Show search engine, which is at the bottom of the Space Show homepage, as it's a chronological search engine. And then do remember, we are copyrighted and trademarked, and you do have permission to download all of our programs and to share them over the internet. Very few rules. Simply don't do anything commercial. Don't edit any of the programs, even if they're for your own website or a YouTube channel or anything like that. And then we don't do written transcripts, and even if you're using that written transcript for your own use. If you have any comments or questions about that, don't hesitate to email me. Then also remember that we are partially brought to you by the Secure World Foundation. They promote cooperative solutions for space security. Get more information about Secure World at their own website, www.swfound.org. And remember, they also sponsor our webinar series, and we appreciate the relationship we've had for the past several years with the Secure World Foundation. And that pretty much takes me to today's program, and I'm happy to focus in on teachers in space with the project manager and the head of the program, Liz Kinnick. And the program is now under the auspices of the Space Frontier Foundation. Liz has been a producer for TED in New York, an advisory board member, Space Ventures project manager at Space Frontier Foundation, executive board member for Yuri's Night Global Space Party, a guide at Dynamic Outdoors, and much more, including a former VP at Morgan Stanley in New York. Liz, it's great to have you back on the show. How are you, and what's new since the last time you've been on for Teachers in Space?
Thank you, David. It's great to talk with you again. I'm great, and it's been almost a year. When we last spoke, I was at Embry-Riddle in Florida last summer for the workshop that we were doing there, which was a space medicine and human factors workshop. And I do believe that's the last time we spoke, so I have a lot to tell you about.
Okay, jump into it.
Okay, so the first thing that's really exciting, you know that each summer we've been doing two types of workshops for teachers. These are professional development workshops. They're a week long, and they're provided free of cost to U.S. high school STEM teachers. The one that we do at Embry-Riddle is about human factors and what it takes to survive in space, and we've just renamed it for this summer. It's going to be called Surviving Space. The other one is a flight experiments workshop, and we developed that together with some folks at NASA Ames and with Luther Richardson, who's the high-altitude balloon launch expert. We've conducted that workshop at NASA Ames. We've conducted it in Mojave, at Dryden, in Palmdale, and this year it's going to be in Columbus, Georgia, which is just about 90 minutes outside of Atlanta. That's where Luther is located, and he's done a lot of balloon launches there. That workshop teaches teachers about payload preparation, flight path planning and monitoring, working with Arduino programming and data sensors, doing data analysis. But it culminates with a contest. The teachers go back to their students, work with their students. This is after the summer workshop, and they have until early December to send us one or two flight experiment designs for launch to the International Space Station. We started that with the workshop in 2012. We ran our first contest, chose our first winner in December of 2012. That was Amy McCormick. She's a teacher from Melbourne, Florida. And her class's experiment just launched. It went up with Orbital Sciences on their first commercial resupplied ISS out of Wallops Island, Virginia, which meant those of us in New York could actually drive down there for that launch, which was great. And that experiment is at ISS now. It's scheduled to be activated on the 7th of March.
What does the experiment do?
I knew you were going to ask me that, and so I've had to pull it up because I have trouble keeping track of this thing. Just the title of it is about five lines long. This is a study of how microgravity affects the activity of enzymes in amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, that's ALS, that's also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, using the model of papain and gelatin. So what they're looking for is whether the sclerosis, the sideways slippage, occurs the same way in microgravity as it does on Earth or not. And some of the things that the judges said about this experiment design was that it's a well-stated question, it's an excellent experiment design, excellent equipment definition and controls, and a good post-flight analysis discussion. So we're really excited to see how this experiment goes and what we learn from it.
Interesting. And these are high school kids doing this?
Actually, this is a junior-senior high school. This is junior and high school. Yeah, it's impressive. This is done through the Student Space Flight Experiments Program. They're our flight service provider, and they work with NanoRacks. So we are also, therefore, a customer of NanoRacks. And the SSCP, Student Space Flight Experiment Program, is a project of the NCESSE, the National Center for Earth and Space Science Education, which is in Maryland, and the astrophysicist. There is the person that we work with, that's Dr. Jeff Goldstein, and he's been really, really helpful to us. And now that I've told you all that, I just forgot what the question was.
That was the question. I was asking
okay.
if these are high school kids.
Yeah, they are. What impressed us when we went to that national conference last summer, even though our experiment had not yet flown, we went just to learn about the experiments that were coming back from the previous year. Some of the kids there were as young as 11. Some of them were sixth graders with really good teachers and with good partnerships with universities. They are doing some serious science. They're actually doing things. There's a backlog of experiments that need to be done, and high school kids for sure can help do these experiments. One of the most impressive ones that we saw was from a Votech school in Massachusetts. So it's 17 and 18-year-olds, and they looked at this backlog of experiments waiting to be done and saw that one of the things that NASA wanted to know was whether artificial blood stores is as stable in microgravity as it is on Earth. And so that's an experiment that they're doing. That was the experiment they would be launching.
Interesting. And then you have a 2013 winner going to the station too, right?
Yeah, we do. And David Milch is the teacher whose class won that contest. He's from New York. And his experiment, his class's experiment, is completely different. The folks in Florida chose the ALS experiment because they had a coach, an athletic coach that they loved at the school, who died of Lou Gehrig's disease. And so the kids felt that doing an experiment related to ALS, and they worked with the ALS Foundation to help determine what type of experiment would be useful, that was something that they could do in honor of their coach and his family and everything that he meant to them and their school. The kids from New York have chosen a completely different experiment. They're doing something related to a type of external coating for space vehicles. So there are all different types. It doesn't just have to be biology. It can be materials. There are lots of different types of experiments that are acceptable and that need to be done.
How do you get the experiments up to the space station, and who do the students get involved in the payload integration, or does NASA do it all, or what?
No, actually, this goes through the SSAP, the Student Space Flight Experiment Program, and then they work with NanoRax. The NanoRax is their provider, and NanoRax figures out what launch these experiments will go on. Ours, the one that's there now, the ALS experiment, was Mission 3, so it's still pretty early in the program for the SSAP, and it was supposed to go on SpaceX, supposed to go in April of last year. But as you know, SpaceX changed their rocket design, and there were some delays. And during that time, while there were delays, a lot of other payloads began to pile up wanting to be launched, and then Orbital came online. And there were some choices that we could make. The first launch we could have switched to was actually a Soyuz launch, but that particular launch wasn't going to provide refrigeration, and this experiment required refrigeration. So we chose to wait, and eventually we wound up being split. So Mission 3 became 3A and 3B. Those that didn't need refrigeration went earlier on Soyuz, and the rest of us, there were about 17 that went on Soyuz, I think, and maybe 11 of us that needed refrigeration, and finally went in January with Orbital. And even that was exciting because as the date slipped for various reasons, as launches often do, especially when you're getting into bad weather, when we finally hit our launch week, the Monday was the day that we had a huge blizzard. The Tuesday was the day that the temperatures were 0 degrees, and we drove down there anyway. And then there was a big solar flare that afternoon, so on Wednesday there was too much radiation. And so we learned all these different things. Orbital said with experience, maybe they could have launched, but this is the first resupply launch, and they had set certain parameters. The temperature was too far below that parameter. The radiation was too far above that parameter, and they finally did launch on Thursday.
You do have an email question from Jerry in Los Angeles, and he says, in order to submit experiments, does the teacher have to do your workshop?
Yes, they do. And thank you for asking that, because we will be opening the applications for the flight experiments workshop on Monday. Our project manager and web manager, Joe Luttrell, told me that he sent me an email last night that the applications are ready for me to look at on our dev server. And I only wanted to think about this today. But when this is done this afternoon, I'll be looking that over with Joe. We should be able to put them live certainly by Monday. Monday.
What is the website for that?
It's going to be TIS, uh-huh, for Teachers in Space, .spacefrontier.org. We are a project right now of the Space Frontier Foundation, so we're on their website, TIS.spacefrontier.org. And the Flight Experiments Workshop will be in Columbus, Georgia. It will be the week of the 21st through the 25th of July.
That's the week of the conference, isn't it?
It is, yeah. The Space Frontier Foundation has their new space conference every year, also in July. and that starts the Thursday night. They usually have some things for the students, as the set, students for exploration and development of space. There's some board meetings, things like that. I believe the conference actually, does it run all 3 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday? So it could be that Wednesday's the board meeting, and Thursday is when the conference opens.
Cool. So if they go to tis.spacefrontier.org, there'll be a button or a tab or something there that says Flight Experiments Workshop, and they click on
that's
that, correct?
That's exactly right. Yep. And to apply, we would prefer that you be, we're going to give preference to U.S. citizens, and we prefer that you be a high school STEM teacher, science, technology, engineering, or math. The purpose of this program is to give those teachers, U.S. high school STEM teachers, real experiences in space. So learning about the high-altitude balloon launches and actually conducting one, participating in preparing for it, packing the payload, filling and launching the balloon, tracking and retrieving the balloon, analyzing the data, teaches you so much about other types of launches. And where we're going with this, after the balloons, we're moving toward suborbital experiments. We've been talking to X-Corps about, and we've been working with Kaki Rodway at X-Corps on what it would take for us to launch similar payloads, similar data sensors to what we use on the balloon, in a CubeSat, first inside of Lynx when they begin their test flights, later outside of Lynx. And what we're trying to do is build a pathway where we go from balloon to suborbital to eventually training teachers as payload specialists and having them actually fly on these suborbital flights operating experiments. That's the goal.
Okay, what else? What is another program you want to update us on? Because I know there's more than that.
Yeah, there is. So the other one I mentioned, the one that has been called Space Medicine and Human Factors, we've been working with Embry-Riddle. They've been a close partner of ours for several years. And Jason Kring, who's a professor of psychology and human factors there, helped us to develop this workshop, and he helps us update and deliver and produce it every year. And Lance Erickson, who is the head of the Applied Aerospace Department. And, you know, last year, Lance just announced at the New Space Conference that Embry-Riddle was starting the first undergraduate commercial space operations program in the country. So Teachers in Space fits really well with that because we're working with high school teachers to give them knowledge and experience and connections to help them inspire students to want to follow these careers and these studies. And then Embry-Riddle is a place where they could actually go to pursue these studies. We're working with them to overhaul the Space Medicine and Human Factors workshop. And I'm not certain at this very moment, I can't tell you today, whether we're going to start that one this year or whether we're going to take more time on that. We're very close to decision point. I'm just not ready to announce it today. But what we do have, meanwhile, is that a teacher who has been through that workshop and flight experiments and helped us to deliver. She volunteered with us and helped us deliver the Space Medicine workshop at Embry-Riddle one summer, and she's been to conferences with us. She's been a great volunteer. I got a call from a new company called Waypoint Space, which is in Houston, and they're a new space training company. They asked me if I had a teacher that would be interested in going through their flight training program, and so we have placed a teacher. Hal Tran from Texas is going to go to Waypoint Space when she finishes her school year this summer and go through their program, so that's really exciting.
Who is behind Waypoint Space?
Kelly Soich is the director. Kevin Heath, I think, is business development. I met these guys at the New Space Conference last year, and it just seemed that we ought to be working together. So much of what they're doing is what we've been teaching in our human factors, Space Medicine and Human Factors workshop, similar also to what NASTAR does outside of Philadelphia. But these guys are going further. They're not just doing suborbital training. They're also doing orbital training. And I'm excited that I'm going to go visit them in Houston at the beginning of March. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they have there. But this is one of the reasons that it becomes interesting. What are the things that we need to have in our surviving space workshop that we need to put people through at Embry-Riddle? We've also done that workshop at the FAA's CAMI facility. And what are the things that we can have teachers go to NASTAR and go to Waypoint Space? NASTAR, by the way, offers their training program free to teachers as well, and they've announced that. Many of our teachers have been to the NASTAR program, and they were even kind enough to put a number of our core volunteers through a day of centrifuge training last August, which was great. We really, really enjoyed that and learned a lot from it. So I recommend anybody who's listening who's a teacher or who knows a teacher who's interested to go look at NASTAR, N-A-S-T-A-R, look at their site and see what they have offered for free, some space training for teachers this summer.
So, listeners, their website is Waypoint, and then the number 2, and then
Waypoint,
Space.
Waypoint, the number 2, Space. That's right. They just got their FAA approval. They're brand new.
You'll have to send me your contacts, email, and everything. Maybe they'd like to talk about their program on the space show.
That is a great idea. I'm sure they would. We're doing a lot of co-promotion since we're both pretty new.
So, I'll before you hang up, if you have that access...
Yes.
Then I will get it and send them a note. So that's good. There's competition then in this line of space training and space business.
Which is great. Isn't that exciting? Yeah.
Probably not for NASTAR.
An industry growing. One person starts something. NASTAR's been doing this, and they've been leaders in the field. But now there's starting to be others.
Yes, I think overall it is very good. I'm not sure if NASTAR is too happy about it, but...
But, you know, sometimes competition is what grows the market, right? And they're in Houston versus Pennsylvania. It could be a good thing.
Yeah, well, it should also make NASTAR stay on their toes and provide a better service. So competition can do wonderful things to improve everything.
Yes.
So what about flying teachers in space? Is that still part of the goals of teachers in space, or are you shifting focus to these kinds of programs?
No, we absolutely still want to fly, and I personally want to go. I want to go. The Pathfinders want to go. Many of the teachers want to go. So we look for things that are the best we can offer the teachers until the flights are available. The flights simply are not available yet. But what we do every year is Rick Searfoss, who is a former space shuttle commander and has now for several years been head of test pilot for X-Corps. He comes out, and we have some other pilots as well, who offer glider flights to the teachers. So that's thrilling. That was the second day of the flight experiments workshop last year. And, you know, it's one thing to learn in physics class how lift works and to understand the theory. And you go on an airplane and, yeah, you know, you're on the airplane and you fly. But for me, to be in a glider, no engine, to feel, see and feel that glider take off ahead of the tow plane because the lift works that well, like, it makes physics real. And that's what's so exciting about it. We've got the glider flights. We've got the flight experiments. We did centrifuge at NASTAR last year. I'm going to go see what we can do with Waypoint Space. We will get there. We're going to give the teachers the best experiences we can, and when the flights are available, we're going to fly them.
So what does a teacher have to do to get involved with your organization? Are they high school only, grade school, STEM? Give us the parameters and the pathway for a teacher to get in touch and become involved with you.
Yeah, right now our preference is definitely for U.S. citizen high school STEM teachers. That's where we started about 2010, December of 2010. We got a really nice educational outreach grant from NASA, and that was achieved by the Pathfinders, the teachers who were first chosen to go to space, and the project manager at the time, and Jason Kring of Embry-Riddle. They all worked together. It was a lot of work and got that grant. And so that's what our focus has been, and I think it makes sense for us to stay there. We are preparing to spin off from the Space Frontier Foundation. We need to be able to fund ourselves at the level that we had when we had that grant. Unfortunately, that grant program was ended during sequestration. And so it makes sense for us to keep our focus exactly where it is while we learn how to fund ourselves. If somebody were to come to us with a really great grant that would enable us to do workshops or experiments or training or flights for elementary school teachers, we would do that. But right now, while we're self-funding, we're sticking with our current expertise. And I say that because of the really excellent three-year evaluation that we got from our external evaluator. We're doing a good job at the high school level, so that's where we're focused.
How many teachers apply usually, and how many become Pathfinders?
We have not expanded the Pathfinder program. We have kept our original Pathfinders, and that's because I personally am not comfortable telling new people that they're Pathfinders until I have flight. And in 2009, when the Pathfinders were selected and suborbital companies were saying we'll be flying in 2 years, the people who started this program thought that, yeah, in a few years we'll have some flights, and we have promises of flights, but the flights don't exist yet. So I'm not ready to expand the Pathfinder program until we have a clear incoming increase in flights. But what we are doing is continuing to put teachers through the workshops, and if they stick with us, if they stay involved, there's two ways you can show me that you're involved, and these are right now both on Facebook. One is there is a page called Teachers in Space, and you can comment and engage in that with other teachers and share your expertise and ask questions and help each other improve your ability to teach space science in the classroom. There's also a Facebook group called Pathfinders Teachers in Space, and we will add you to that once you've been to one of our workshops. And so that's a more select group, and those teachers are very supportive of each other as well. Once you've been through a workshop, you can tell me you want to volunteer. We'll figure out what your availability is and what interests you. It has to be something that interests you, because I need you to do it. And when we find that thing that you really like, we'll put you on that team. So we have a number of teacher volunteers who've been to our workshops and are now helping us do our Instagram, do fundraising, write grants, maintain our website, you know, whatever it is that they enjoy. And we're really, really, really grateful to them for that.
So your Facebook page for people wanting to connect is Teachers in Space.
Teachers in Space on Facebook. Please like it, share it, get other people to like it.
Okay, you have another email. This is Sharon, is in Tucson, and she says, I'm at work, David, listening, so no telephone. Please ask if a foreign teacher with a green card teaching in American high school is the type of person that you would want, or does the fact that this woman is from another country, Canada, interfere, even though she's teaching here in America?
Okay. She's teaching here in America. That's good. That means she's reaching American school kids. That's important to us. Where it has been an issue, if they're a foreign citizen, sometimes when we take tours, when we go inside the SpaceX plant in Hawthorne, there are certain places that we go where if you're a foreign national, you may not be cleared, and that may make you sad, but if you don't mind being sad about missing an activity that we can't control what that facility's security requirements are, if that's okay because you want everything else, we would still include you. That I just want you to know that occasionally there are maybe a half-day thing at some workshops that you may not be able to attend if you're not U.S. citizen. And we'll tell you that at time of selection.
Okay, and I have another question from Bob, and Bob is in Chicago, and he says, why do you want to spin off from Space Frontier Foundation, and will you still have a relationship with them?
Yeah, we will. And I would say that the Space Frontier Foundation has been an incubator. This is a project. The Space Frontier Foundation does do projects. They do have project managers. Other projects that they have include the New Space Conference that they produce every year, and also the business plan competition, which usually occurs at the conference but is a separate project with a separate budget and a separate project manager. The foundation is not large, and under the NASA grant, Teachers in Space had a very big operating budget. That's not a level of funding that the foundation is currently prepared to support, and so it's been a hard decision what to do with Teachers in Space with the end of the NASA grant. And the board feel, and I can understand this, and I support it, it's okay, that the best thing is to spin us off, help us get on our feet, and let us go do things on our own. They don't have to manage us. It's less overhead. They can focus on their political activity and their conference and their business plan competition, and we can focus on someday getting Teachers to Space and support each other.
The split off isn't coming out of any problems. It's coming out of wanting to grow differently.
That's right. It's a growth choice.
Are you focused at all on doing anything orbital with the Teachers in Space, or you first want to get the suborbital flights underway?
Yeah, I would say we are not focused on orbital flights for teachers at this point for three reasons. Number one, it's extremely expensive, millions of dollars. We're not there yet. Number two, it's extremely time-consuming. Right now, the best way that I know for a person to pay to go to space orbitally is with Space Adventures. And what they're really doing is buying you into the Russian space program, and you will train as a cosmonaut. And, you know, every now and then we hear about which latest celebrity, whoever can afford to do this, says they're going, and some of them wash out. You know, not everybody can do that. It's physically very demanding. Richard Garriott made a great movie called Man on a Mission about his experience. He did make it, and it was not easy. Teachers don't typically have 9 months to go live in Russia and learn Russian and become a cosmonaut. And, you know, maybe they would. Maybe they want that badly to go to space that they totally would. But then there's also the issue of the multi-million-dollar price tag. So, no, orbital for humans is not on our list right now. We do have our experiments at ISS, and we're looking at suborbital for humans. What, a lot more affordable, a lot easier.
You said there were three reasons, and you gave two. Do you remember the third?
Yeah. Time, money, and, frankly, safety. The suborbital flights don't have a rocket's worth of rocket fuel underneath them.
Okay. Well, those are obviously good reasons, and there really isn't any other market yet except for the ISS. So your options to go orbital are pretty limited for the time being.
Exactly.
Do you have programs? I mean, you're focused on the teachers, and you are Teachers in Space, but what about a subset for, I guess that you'd have to be looking at older kids in high school, but students in space or something like that, where there's actually programs for leading, accelerating, wonderful, great students or something like that?
What we want to do is engage the students with their teachers, right? The goal is to get the teachers really excited, have them go back, because it's a multiplier effect. Every teacher in, typically, for example, I'm in New York City. Our New York City high school teachers have 30-some kids in a class. At the high school level, they may teach four classes in a semester. They may be reaching 120 kids a semester, and then they keep going, right? So over 5 years, that's a lot of students that we're reaching. It's really great for the teachers to include their students. Teachers are very, very interested in their students, and they want to include their students. It's not our priority, so that's why we do special things like the flight experiments contest where the teachers work with the students. And then what we want to do is get the students who were involved in the design of that experiment to be able to attend the launch or to attend the conference and speak and present at the National Air and Space Museum. It's interesting. I've been learning an awful lot about how public education works as well and how it differs state to state. Turns out that in New York, it's really difficult for a teacher to get permission to take students out of state overnight. So we're working closely with that teacher for our next SSEP launch to see whether it will be possible to get some of those students down to Virginia for the launch, and I sure hope it will.
I would imagine the parents have to take the kids, but
I think that's what it takes. Yeah, exactly. The parents have to just do it.
You know, and there are no launches yet in New York, right?
No. But Virginia's close. Virginia's drivable. Florida, but it's...
Well, Florida's... even California's drivable if you want to spend 3 or 4 days
exactly.
doing it. Are you going to be a 501c3 when you spin off?
Yes, we will.
So that status stays the same?
Yes, it does.
Now, in terms of these programs, is your attendance limited? Let's look at your flight workshop. Your attendance is limited, so you need to apply early. Assuming you meet those parameters, are you automatically selected, or is there some kind of pecking order you use?
Yeah, it is limited. We only take 25 teachers, and in fact, we actually tend to accept more like 28 because at the last minute, probably about 3, something is going to happen. People have emergencies. Things happen in people's families and their lives, and typically 3 teachers, days before the workshop, as much as they want to be there, will suddenly let us know that they can't be. So we're going to accept slightly over 25, but not 30.
And
we do begin accepting them if they meet the criteria. And I'm not the expert right now on the criteria. That's been decided by the Pathfinders who've developed that workshop. And they've been working with our project manager to get this application up. I will see it at 4 o'clock this afternoon. But whatever is on there, whatever criteria they've chosen. And it's not a multi-page application. It's not a difficult application at all. And if they meet those qualifications, we are going to begin accepting right away because we understand that people have other choices. You may have a summer job, a vacation, another workshop you want to attend. So we're going to reward you. If you are qualified, the earlier you apply, the earlier you're going to know what you're doing this summer.
Okay, so when you said earlier that there's no charge or no cost to the teacher, does that include their travel and transportation and lodging? Is all of it free to the teacher?
Yeah, sadly, no. The workshop itself is free. Under the NASA grant, we were able to provide stipends and offset some of the travel for some teachers. We don't have that ability this year. And we are really, really working. We did our first crowdfunding effort last year, but it was aimed only at funding this year's launch, the launch that goes in May. And we succeeded in raising enough money, not just at that crowdfunding effort. That crowdfunding effort, it was our first, and it was done quickly, and it did not meet its goal, but it and some other private donations and other efforts brought in enough funds that we will be able to launch the winner of last year's experiment this year in May. We have not yet raised enough money to be able to provide travel stipends for our teachers this year. In a way, that kind of makes me glad that we've moved it to Georgia because it's at least central to the East Coast. A lot of people can drive there. It's the first time that we've done it on the East Coast. We've had it in California every year previously. So this is an opportunity, if you're on the East, to come to this workshop, and we certainly are working to get adequately funded that we can begin to provide travel stipends again next year.
Okay, you have a caller. Hi, caller. Who are you? Where are you? Welcome to the show. Hello, caller. Caller, are you there? Well, I guess you did have a caller. That was a a short wait. Okay, caller, if you want to call back, we're certainly interested in hearing from you. Again, the toll-free number will be 1-866-687-7223. Well, they're calling back. Let's see if it works this time. Good morning, caller. Are you there?
Yeah, this is Doug from Southern California. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can. Were you the one who called a minute ago?
That is correct, yeah. I could hear you talking, but apparently you couldn't hear me.
Okay, go for it, Doug.
Okay, you know, it seems to me as though, you know, as a space advocate, you know, I myself have some ideas for architecture, and along with that could come really a whole bunch of, like, little projects that I can imagine space advocates could sort of partner with students, whether it's artistic sorts of stuff or actually experiments, sort of small, you know, individual experiments. Is there any sort of relationship between, I don't know, space organizations and teachers in space for this sort of relationship?
Meaning other projects that we could do?
Yeah, in other words, as space advocates, could we suggest projects, and then perhaps through teachers, those projects could be proposed to students to work on? I could give you a number of examples.
So I would say that right now, because we're spinning off and no longer have our NASA grant, the most important thing for us is to figure out a way to fund our activities. And so funding is going to be a major priority factor. So if there is a project that is space-related that meets our mission of giving teachers real space experiences that they can share with the classroom, and there's funding for it, we are very interested in that.
Well, I wasn't thinking about so much about experiences for the teachers as it would be class projects for the students. Do you want me to give you an I mean, there's a lot of examples I could give.
And do you think, because, you know, there's also the Challenger Center, which is very focused on students. If it's directly for the students, I would say we would want to know about it and maybe share it on our website and our Facebook, put it in our newsletter. Teachers would be very happy. Teachers love to receive interesting, useful, quality things that they can do with their students. I don't know that we would put it into our workshops or make it part of our program, but we'd certainly be happy to help share it.
Okay, that makes sense. What was the center that you were talking about?
Challenger, the Challenger Center. Like teachers, you know, our Teachers in Space program was inspired by NASA's original Teacher in Space program, which unfortunately was so short-lived due to the Challenger explosion. The Challenger Center was also inspired by that initial program, and it's in memory of Krista McAuliffe and of the crew of the Challenger. It's in many states, even Alaska, have Challenger Centers, and you can look for them online. They provide space activities for students.
Okay.
There's the one near you, Doug, is in Downey.
Okay. Downey.
Over
there. Greater LA area is so big, I'm trying to...
Well, you go down 5, and it's before Orange County.
Oh, okay. I get an idea. Somewhere around Anaheim?
A little north of Anaheim.
Okay, that's cool. Well, I appreciate that info.
So you ought to go over there sometime and see it. It's really amazing. And see the projects and the flights the students have, and they have manuals that they have to operate their spaceship with, and they drill them with emergencies and stuff. I mean, I've been through it many times, and they have lots of programming on Challenger Centers, and you would be really impressed with it.
Is this open to the public?
Yeah, you can go in and see it. I don't know if they'll let you join a student class that's in process. You know, I get press privileges, so it's a little bit different. But you can go see it. I mean, the first floor is all the museum kind of stuff, and then the second floor is the inside of a spaceship that you learn to fly with a manual, and it's pretty cool. And that is a different approach than Teachers in Space.
Yeah. Each filling its niche.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, that's cool. I appreciate you talking the question.
Okay, thank you, Doug.
Sure thing. Bye-bye.
Listeners, phone line is available for those of you who would like to call in, this Friday, 1-866-687-7223. How many years have you now been at the helm of Teachers in Space?
Since October of 2011.
And from my perspective, it's not recognizable from when you took it over. So do you want to spend a few minutes and tell us and kind of summarize? I mean, you know, I'm not really asking you to toot your own horn, but I guess I am, because you've really changed its focus, its mission, and to say that you've beefed it up with programming is clearly an understatement, but you've really transformed the organization since you took over.
Well, thank you, David, but I really want to give credit. I'm the leader, and I say, why don't we do this? But the people who helped me do that are very, very important, and those are our project manager, Joe Luttrell, and our pathfinders. So Rachel Manzer, Jim Kuhl, and Mike Schmidt on the flight experiments, and Lynette Oliver, who does our development and fundraising in Alaska, and Chantel Rose, who was in Ohio when she started working on the space medicine workshop, and then she moved to Alaska, and now she's back in Ohio. So, you know, it's been almost 5 years now that these pathfinders have been part of Teachers in Space, and things happen in 5 years in your life. People get married, they get divorced, they have kids, they get sick, they have accidents, they move, and they're still with us, and they're still working. We have an external evaluator from a company called Designed Instruction. He was hired at the time that we got the NASA grant. That was a requirement of the grant. And we were really delighted last year to get his final report. Working with him, working with the Pathfinders, working with the sponsors, the folks at the NASA centers, at the FAA, at Embry-Riddle, wherever we've held our workshops and whoever has helped us produce them have been really great about giving us feedback. They tend to have a lot of educational experience themselves, and they can tell us what's working and not working. The teachers tell us what's working and not working. When I took the project over in 2011, the weak point was definitely the flight experiments workshop. In fact, in 2011, right before I took it over, that workshop did not have an experiment that worked, and it did not have a way to fly experiments. And so I sat down with the team, and that was really my focus the first year, to work with those pathfinders and say, what can we do that we can afford and that's reliable and that we can actually fly? And we had a lot of help from Lynn Harper at NASA Ames, and we found Luther Richardson, the balloon expert who's got some world records for balloon launches in Georgia. And with him, we were able, and with NASA and the FAA, to come up with this balloon launch experiment, which teaches so much about what you need to know about payload preparation, integration, operation, tracking, retrieval. And it's just been thrilling to see the difference in the evaluations since we made those changes to that workshop. And it's become, I'd say now, it's kind of the cornerstone of the program. It's from there that we're going to build our way to getting these teachers themselves into space.
Okay, I have another email that came in from Mike Dean. And, you know, he wants to focus on something a little bit different but connected with Teachers in Space, so I'll leave it up to you as to how you want to handle this. I'm very interested in the company you've been talking about, Waypoint to Space. Can you tell us a little more about them and how you will be working with them? Thanks, Mike Dean.
Okay, and yeah, I should be able to do that if my laptop is still powered up, and if not, no, it's dead. I'll just tell you from memory. I know that they put out a press release about a week ago, which, David, I can share that with you when I find it. They are at NASA Johnson. Apparently, there is some unused facility at some NASA locations these days, and so these guys have started up their company there, and they are providing training. I took a quick look at that press release. I haven't been to the facility yet. I'm going in March. But they're offering suborbital and orbital astronaut training, And when I met with Kelly Soich, who's the head of the company, he was explaining to me that the goal of their training is to, it's like military training, to push a person to the point that you find out what they can handle and where their trouble spots are here on Earth before they go to space, because they're not just focused on training people to get the most out of a one-time joyride. They're also training people who may be doing this repeatedly for work, for research. And if you have to work, if you've done a zero-gravity flight, you know that it's one thing to just push off and float around when they tell you to and come back down when they tell you to, versus trying to work and set up and manage and experiment no matter what the plane's doing. That's a lot harder. So the Waypoint Space is really exploring what are the best types of training and testing to identify who are the good candidates for this type of work and what people, individuals, need to maximize their ability to work, especially in the suborbital environment.
So are they open for business yet, about to be open for business?
My understanding, that the press release that I got about a week ago was that they had received their FAA approval, so they are coming online. I don't believe they're online yet. I will know so much more after I go visit them at the beginning of March. And one of the things that we are doing, because they're new and because we're new, is we prepare for our spinoff and our new self-funding to help each other get publicity and make connections and get well entrenched in this new commercial space industry. One of the things we want to do with the teacher that we're placing there is record a lot of her experiences. And I just had a great visit with Tarek Malik over at space.com the other day. He came down and attended our launch. We were waiting for the launch at Wallops Island, so we had a lot of time to talk with him as we drove 6 hours down to Virginia and then drove back up again. We're going to be doing some kind of a series of pieces about what's going on with our flight experiments and also Haltrans progress through Waypoint Space.
Cool. And Mike, as I said earlier, I'd like to invite them to be a guest on the show. So
yes.
I will be following that up. So you should watch the newsletters for that. If you're not a newsletter subscriber yet, you should become one, so you can stay current on that. Well, that's exciting. You'll both grow together, and you'll enhance one another.
Yes.
Not bad. So when you go to these launch, well, so Virginia's close by. Have you done anything to go down to a launch in Florida, or is that just too far and too difficult, especially with students?
I personally did. As the space shuttle program was ending, I had never yet managed to see a launch. I had a friend over from England who really wanted to see a launch, and we started tracking. And when it got to be 24 hours before the launch of Endeavour, and it had not been postponed, we jumped in the car, drove down there, and got to Cocoa Beach just in time to pull over by the water and watch the launch. So that was super exciting. It's really hard to plan to attend a launch in Florida if you're in New York, because it's such a long way and these things do tend to shift around. So I don't know. If we had an experiment flying out of Florida, we would make every effort to be there. But right now, our experiments just happened so far to have been going from Wallace Island, so that's where we go.
It's hard for Californians to plan on going to a Florida launch, too, because they're scrubbed so often. And then what do you do? Do you wait there? Do you go back? I mean, you know, it's really challenging sometimes. So I went to an Endeavour launch. It was a night launch, and thank God it went off to the exact second. But we were really worried that, you know, we could stay maybe two or three more days, and then that was it. So it is hard. They sometimes do get scrubbed. And look, SpaceX's Vandenberg launch, you know, was delayed a lot before it finally went, and that's kind of in my backyard.
Yeah.
So what can one say? So I'm also interested in the new company, Waypoint to Space, so I'm going to look forward to talking to them. What do you plan for the future? Are you going to add some additional programming, some additional workshops? What do you see in the next 1 to 2 or 3 years as your own independent standalone organization?
I really want to get these teachers to space. So right now, a couple of offers that we have, you know, that 2008, 2007, when the project was first being started at Space Frontier Foundation, Rick Tomlinson went around and got some commitments from some space companies that when they had flights, they would give a flight to teachers in space. One of those was X-Corps. So we do have a flight coming up someday on Lynx for a teacher. One of them was Masten. Masten have since told us that they would like to convert that to an experiment flight. So that's fine. That gives us the opportunity to put something in the nose cone of a Zero craft on one of its test flights. Some of the companies are no longer in business. So we are, you know, right now X-Corps and Masten are probably our best opportunities to fly things. We also have a possibility, there may be some opportunities because NASA's Flight Opportunities Program is moving beyond just Zero-G and starting to do some things with Virgin Galactic. Perhaps we will have some opportunities and maybe some extra payload space in the early days where we can put some of our really little experiments or data sensors on some Virgin flights. What I want to do is get to the point where we are teaching teachers about payload specification, payload integration, payload operation, putting the teachers through training at NASTAR at Waypoint to Space, and then flying them with these experiments. So whatever it takes to make that happen, if there are workshops that we can produce, especially working with good partners like Embry-Riddle or NASA or FAA, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, anybody that can help us put on a good quality workshop that gets teachers ready to do these things and takes us to the next level, that's what we're going to be looking for. I don't have a grand plan to take over the world and be the provider of space education to U.S. high schools. It's not about that. It's about giving really good quality training to a select set of teachers every year that gets us closer to getting those teachers on flights.
Well, you're going to have to work on that grand plan, Liz. When can we expect to see Teachers in Space on its own? You think around October, toward the end of the year?
Yeah, that's probably the earliest we could really do it because our team is so small and we're all volunteers. You know, the teachers are teachers, and teachers can't do much of anything else during the day except teach. They're not sitting at a desk where they can multitask on a conference call emailing some volunteer organization. They're teaching. So they only have a few hours to give us in the evenings and on weekends. They have families, too. So the team's pretty busy at this time of year getting ready to deliver these workshops. Meanwhile, Space Frontier Foundation also largely volunteer, often young people, often students. They're getting ready to produce their conference and the business plan competition. So we know from past experience we're all going to get busier and busier through the month of July. Then in August, we're all going to have to pick up the pieces for the rest of our lives. And in September, finish, if we're lucky, the spinoff. So we're just figuring out how to do it. I've never set up a 501c3 before. Some of my volunteers have some experience. I've got some lawyers helping me, board members of the foundation helping me. But I don't honestly yet know how much work it is. We think October 1st.
Okay. Well, when you do it, and you're on your own, let me know, and we'll bring you back as an independent Teachers in Space. You're keeping the name, I assume, right?
Yes, we will keep the name.
Okay. Any takeaways? What would you like our listeners to remember for the most part or the priorities from today's discussion?
Number one priority, please go to our website, tis.spacefrontier.org, and look for the applications. They should be up by Monday. Maybe they'll be up this weekend, but they'll definitely be up on Monday. If you're a teacher, apply. Come to the workshop. Or if you know a teacher, please tell them, post it on your Facebook, Instagram, at email it. Help us get 25, 30 really qualified U.S. high school science, technology, engineering, math teachers into this workshop, Flying Experiments, this summer.
Okay, is there a second takeaway or point? Because you said number one, so that seems to think there's another one coming.
There's always another one, yeah. Number one is fill that workshop with good teachers. Number two is please support us. If you like what we're doing, if you want to see space education for teachers and space opportunities for teachers, please do donate. Please do support teachers in space, and you can do that through our website as well.
Okay. We'll talk to you when you're standing on your own, and looking forward to it.
David, thank you so much. Thank you for what you do.
Thank you. And listeners, that's it for today. And tomorrow, Sunday is open lines. So hopefully you'll call in, and anything is fair game as long as it's space related. So thank you all for listening. Thanks to Liz and the fine job she's doing with Teachers in Space. And until Sunday, everyone, have a good, safe weekend. Goodbye from the Space Show.